Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Jill Robbins, Bruce Alpert, and Katie Weaver. Later, we will tell you what's trending today, and Anna Mateo will bring us this week's health report. First, here is Brian Lynn.
The suspect in two bombings Saturday in New York City and New Jersey has been captured after being wounded in a gun battle with police. The 28-year-old suspect was identified as Ahmad Khan Rahami, a naturalized U.S. citizen from Afghanistan. News video showed Rahami being placed into an ambulance Monday in the New Jersey town of Linden, about 32 kilometers from New York City. The suspect's arm was bloody and bandaged, and officials said he underwent surgery for a gunshot wound to the leg. Local officials said two police officers were also injured during the operation. The Federal Bureau of Investigation said Rahami was wanted for questioning in an explosion Saturday evening in the Chelsea area of New York City that wounded 29 people. The explosion went off in or near a trash container in a busy area of the neighborhood. The blast sent glass and debris flying into the air. All 29 people wounded were treated and released from the hospital. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo described the Chelsea bombing as obviously an act of terrorism. Rahami is also a suspect in another bombing that happened hours earlier in Seaside Park, New Jersey, about 135 kilometers south of New York City. Police said a pipe bomb exploded before the start of a charity race to help U.S. Marines. No one was wounded. The FBI and New York police have also been searching for possible links between the Chelsea bombing and another explosive device found a few blocks away that did not go off. That bomb was recovered shortly after the first one exploded. Police safely removed it from the area and set it off in a controlled explosion. Also, five explosive devices were discovered Sunday in a trash can at a train station in Elizabeth, New Jersey, just outside New York City. One of the devices exploded while a bomb squad robot tried to disarm it, but no one was hurt. The bombings happened as leaders from around the world were gathering in New York City for the United Nations General Assembly. A UN spokesman told VOA that officials evaluate the security needs each day inside the UN complex. I'm Brian Lynn.
World leaders are gathered at United Nations headquarters in New York for meetings of the UN General Assembly. The leaders were invited for a special meeting to discuss ways to improve the international community's reaction to the growing number of refugees and migrants worldwide. Jill Robbins has more.
The world's refugee crisis is now as bad as it was during World War II, according to the New York Times newspaper. The leaders are expected to talk about access to education for refugee children. When families flee from countries because of war or political insecurity, the children leave behind not only their homes, but, in many cases, their education. That is the subject of a new report from the United Nations Refugee Agency. The report says that 3.7 million children under the UN agency's mandate are unable to attend school. The situation gets worse as the children get older. The percentage drops from 50% for young children to 22% at secondary school age. UN information also shows that only 1% of refugees attend a university, compared to 34% of the world's population.
Filippo Grandi is the UN High Commissioner for Refugees. In a statement, he said that refugee education is, too often, terribly ignored. Grandi also said he would like to change that. In his words, education is one of the few opportunities we have to transform and build the next generation of refugees so that they can improve the futures of the many millions of forcibly displaced people. The issue of providing refugees with an education is more difficult because of the expanding population and a lack of necessary financing. According to the UN report, the population of school-aged children grew by 30% in 2014. That number requires an extra 20,000 teachers. Many host nations already struggle to provide simple but necessary services for refugees. But now they must also find a place to hold classes and a way to purchase additional school supplies. Often the children struggle in their studies after missing several years of school and do not speak the local language. As the international community considers how best to deal with the refugee crisis, it is essential that we think beyond basic survival, Grandi said. Education enables refugees to positively shape the future of both their countries of asylum and their home countries when they one day return. Refugees from Syria, for example, have been in the news as the Syrian conflict continues for a sixth year. Countries from Turkey to those across Europe must decide what to do to assist the families that have fled the fighting. The UN Refugee Agency says there are about 1.7 million Syrian refugees who should be in school. However, 900,000 of them are not.
The agency has asked international donors for $4.5 billion this year to aid Syrian refugees. Financing for education involves $662 million of that request. As of June, the UN had collected only 39% of that total. In 2015, Most of the donations for this education program arrived in the final 2 months of the year. UN officials said this hurt the ability of host countries to make effective long-term plans for schooling. The UN is asking donors to provide dependable funding over many years to help those countries better plan for providing teachers and supplies. It also urges the host governments to include refugees in their national education systems instead of separate schools. Those schools cannot easily be supervised in the same way to guarantee their effectiveness. The new report discusses the helpful effects of education, saying it helps children avoid child labor and membership in armed groups. It also said that not providing schooling only extends conflict and leads to more people being displaced. There is solid evidence that quality education gives children a place of safety and can also reduce child marriage, child labor, exploitative and dangerous work, and teenage pregnancy, the report says. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Alice Bryant.
A record 27.3 million Hispanics are eligible to vote in the U.S. elections this November. Hispanics now make up about 12% of all U.S. voters. That is the same percentage as African American voters, according to Pew Research Center. Albert Camarillo teaches history at Stanford University in California. He is also a founding director of the university's Center for Comparative Studies in Race and Ethnicity. Camarillo said 3,000 more Hispanics become eligible to vote in the U.S. elections every day. In a Stanford University report, he said Hispanic voters could make a huge difference in states where Hispanics make up a large percentage of the population. The growth of Hispanic voters, he said, changed Arizona, a state that historically has strong ties to the Republican Party. The state has only supported one Democrat in the past 10 presidential elections. But now, Arizonans could vote for either a Republican or Democratic candidate, he said. Political observers thought that Hispanics would vote in larger numbers for Democrat Hillary Clinton than they did for Barack Obama in 2012. 4 years ago, Obama defeated Republican Mitt Romney 71% to 27% among Hispanics, according to exit polls. But a new study suggests Clinton, while leading Trump among Hispanic voters, will have a hard time topping Obama's 71% support. The opinion that Clinton would do better with Hispanic voters was based on statements made by Republican Donald Trump. Trump had called on the government to expel all 11 million illegal immigrants. He suggested many Mexican immigrants were drug dealers or rapists, and promised to build a huge wall along the Mexican border. Ivana Cancela is political director of the Las Vegas, Nevada Culinary Union. Many members of the group are Hispanic. In recent days, efforts to measure the Hispanic vote produced mixed results. Polling organizations questioned likely voters after Trump gave an immigration speech on August 31st. In the speech, Trump said he would focus on removing illegal immigrants who were guilty of crimes. He did not say what would happen to the large majority of illegal immigrants who were not guilty of crimes. But he said illegal immigrants who want legal guarantees in the United States would first have to return to their home countries. In his speech, Trump blamed illegal immigrants for violent crimes, and he said the United States would be more selective in deciding who to admit, choosing people who shared American values and would not take away jobs from U.S. citizens. Some members of Trump's Hispanic advisory group said they were disappointed he did not soften his earlier statements on immigration. A recent poll found that Clinton is getting a lower percentage of Hispanic votes than Obama did in four states where the Hispanic vote is important. The good news for Clinton is that the same Univision poll showed Trump getting a lower percentage of Hispanic votes than Republican Mitt Romney did in 2012. Romney won between 6% and 10% more Hispanic votes than Trump is receiving in the states covered by the Univision poll. Kevin Wagner teaches political science at Florida Atlantic University. He said recent poll results may not relate to how people vote in November because it came after a bad week for Clinton. She had to leave a New York City ceremony marking the anniversary of the 2001 terrorist attacks because she wasn't feeling well. She also had to back away from a statement in which she called half of Trump's supporters deplorable. She described them as holding racist or far-right opinions. Camarillo of Stanford University said Hispanic voter turnout will depend on motivation. By that, he means how much worse voters think a candidate can make their lives. I'm Bruce Alpert.
Researchers say a thick haze caused by man-made forest fires in Indonesia is the likely cause of more than 100,000 deaths. The pollution also has been blamed for deaths in nearby Malaysia and Singapore. The haze has hurt relations between Indonesia and its neighbors. Scientists from Harvard and Columbia universities used a complex method to estimate the number of deaths from the haze. The number of deaths is far greater than the Indonesian government's official number of 19 deaths. Researchers estimated there were 91,600 deaths in Indonesia, 6,500 deaths in Malaysia, and 2,200 in Singapore. The fires in Indonesia last year were the worst since 1997. Each year, fires are set in Indonesia's forests and in peat areas. Peat is a collection of dead plants. Burning is a fast and low-cost way to clear peat areas and land for palm oil and pulpwood production. Rajasekhar Bals is an environmental engineering expert at the National University of Singapore. He told the Associated Press the study could be a wake-up call for Indonesia. He added that the country should take action to stop the fires. Balls said there must be cooperation throughout the area to deal with public health problems caused by the fires. The activist group Greenpeace said the study is groundbreaking. The organization, known for protecting the environment, also cautioned that the new numbers represent a conservative estimate. The study did not include the impact the haze has on children and future generations. Nursum Abriham is from the Indonesian Medical Association's West Kalimantan chapter. He told the media how Indonesian health workers have been overworked by the haze. The study is to be published in the journal Environmental Research Letters. I'm Katie Weaver.
This is what's trending today. Hollywood honored its television stars Sunday night in Los Angeles. Actors, directors, writers, and others gathered at the Microsoft Theater for the 68th Emmy Awards ceremony. The biggest winner was the HBO fantasy series Game of Thrones. It received 12 Emmy Awards this year. The show has won 38 Emmys since its first season aired in 2011. It also broke a record set by the comedy show Frasier for the most primetime series Emmy Awards. Thousands posted congratulations to the show on Twitter. Many also commented on the show's stars. The Curly Critic praised British actress Emilia Clarke, who plays Daenerys Targaryen, the mother of the dragons, on the show. Emilia Clarke was an absolute queen at the Emmys, the Curly Critic tweeted. Another noted how normal and likable the actress appears. There were also lots of social media posts about matching tattoos on Game of Thrones cast members Sophie Turner and Maisie Williams. The two play sisters Sansa and Arya Stark on the show, but they like each other in real life. Their tattoos record the date in 2009 they found out they were cast in Game of Thrones. And that's what's trending today. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. A group of friends from around the world have gathered because they all have something in common. They all want to have fun. They all want to exercise. And they all want to eat healthy. Those reasons are great, but they are not why these people have banded together. They have banded together because they all carry the APOE4 gene. That gene increases their risk of getting the brain-destroying disease known as Alzheimer's.
We all found out that we carried one or two copies of the APOE4 gene, which puts us at higher risk for Alzheimer's.
Susan, who gives only her first name, says her father died from Alzheimer's. As the disease progressed in his brain, doctors had little to offer except a memory-boosting drug called Aricept. She adds that doctors had a fatalistic attitude, meaning they acted as if they could do nothing to reverse the damage from Alzheimer's.
It was just more or less, well, we could try Aricept, but it won't work for very long. And there's a fatalistic attitude with some doctors that once you have it, there's nothing you can do, and you just sort of have to get your affairs in order and expect that you're going to the nursing home next.
4 years ago, Susan discovered that she has the APOE4 gene. She says that she was determined to do something. So she went online and looked for other people with the APOE4 gene. When Susan found other people with her genotype, they banded together to hack their own health. In other words, they wanted to figure out how to help themselves without the help of traditional doctors, nurses, and hospitals.
A bunch of us banded together and decided to see, can we hack our own health?
One of those health hackers is a woman who goes by the name Julie G. Before banding together with Susan, Julie G. had been anxiously watching as her senior moments increased. A senior moment refers to a time when an older person forgets something. But Julie G. was not really an older or senior person. She was only 49. Then she learned that she has the APOE4 gene.
The symptoms I was having together with my very high risk of developing Alzheimer's disease, I was pretty terrified.
Her fear turned to bravery as she helped build an online community named APOE4.info. This community of health hackers researched the many conflicting studies about healthy brains. Then they directed their attention to leafy greens, healthy fats, exercise, and more. Julie G. made lifestyle changes. And now, she says, her thinking ability, or cognition, has improved.
It's been a very exciting journey. My cognition is very much improved now.
The group's approach is confirmed by doctors and researchers in the medical community. Dale Bredesen is a researcher at the Buck Institute for Research on Aging. He studies how combining lifestyle changes with other measures can reverse the weakening of a person's cognitive ability. Bredesen has worked with the APOE4.info group for 2 years. In June of this year, he added to their hope. Bredesen documented a reversal in cognitive decline in patients with early Alzheimer's. He says that when he looked at the actual causes of cognitive decline, he found many lifestyle factors affect the brain, including stress and sleep.
This is the first time in history that there's been reversal of cognitive decline in early Alzheimer's disease.
Bredesen calls the APOE4.info group a great example of people who are taking their health care into their own hands. They are using many different ways to help the brain, such as exercising, eating healthy foods, cutting down on stress, and getting enough sleep.
What's happened up until now is that people will say, don't bother to find out your APOE status, because if you find out that you're APOE4 positive, then there will be nothing to do about it. And again, we disagree with that. There's a lot that can be done with it today.
Members of the group say the sooner a person starts taking control of their brain health, the more likely that a genetic risk won't become their fate.
At least I can hopefully prevent it, but if not, at least put it off for decades.
Bredesen plans clinical studies to improve his methods for reversing cognitive decline. The Alzheimer's Association calls his work a promising possibility. The association adds that his research may help the United States develop national policies to prevent or effectively treat Alzheimer's disease by the year 2025. I'm Anna Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.